Nico Alcoholic. Hey y'all. I'm nervous. I've never get used to this no matter how many times I do it. for real. Anyway, yeah, let's have a moment of silence for the alcohol who's still suffering. So yeah, what it was like for me. I always growing up as a kid, like I've always been in fear. I was always afraid kid. I wouldn't want to talk to people in the corner. I just had fear like all the way in me, as long as I can remember. Growing up, I was raised by two teenage parents. Actually, my sobriety date, I'm going to start there. I have a sponsor. My sobriety date is June 8th, 2022. God willing, I'll have 4 years this year. No fronts. But yeah, I always was in fear. I never felt comfortable. I always felt odd. I always felt out of place. Like, even today, like, I still feel those similarities, you know? Put me in a room of people that look just like me. I am always feel out of place. That's always been my thing. And so, what happened, like, I started drinking at a teenage, at, like, 12, you know? And as soon as I drank, that made me feel comfortable. I was like, ooh, okay, now I can talk to people, now I can party, now I can get out of my, like, I can mask myself. And that was it to me. I was off. I was like, yeah, I was always the one that brought alcohol. I never, like, there wasn't a time where I never wanted to drink. Like, I love drinking. Drinking was, like, my master. Like, I was, like, drugs were, like, part of my story, but I'm definitely, like, alcohol was my drug of choice. Always has been. And so, I drank a lot. I partied a lot. And what happened is, like, the drinking and the partying, blackouts. I started to have blackouts. I can't remember that. I still experience that today, honestly, in a different way. For real, in a different form. But, yeah, I started to have blackouts, and I was like, what? This isn't fun. Like, I can't remember, you know? And then, like, when those happened, like, that's when I wanted to, like, control my drinking a little bit, because I was like, okay, something's happening and I can't remember. And, like, that's not cool. And people are saying that I'm acting crazy. I'm acting out of character. I started to get that, like, started to get humiliated in a sense or whatever. And just really out of character things. I was like, that I could never do that, you know. I would never do those things. And I started to mask a lot. And also being queer. Also, I go by they, he pronouns. Sorry, I'm, like, jumping back and forth. But anyways, and so being queer. Yeah, I was so I'm queer. That part, I'm queer. Yeah, and so, like, when I started to figure that out, my queerness, you know, drinking, and that's another reason why I masked too, because, like, my sexuality is a lot of part of my drinking. Like, I'm in fear. And so, like, being raised in Baptist church, that was something that wasn't okay. Like, I was told that, you know, you're going to burn in hell, this and that. So I had a lot of, like, religious trauma. I was very masculine as a child. And I never fit in. Like I would get called names. I was bullied, you know, a lot. And I just never felt comfortable. Even after I was drinking and using, like, I still started to feel uncomfortable even after that made me feel comfortable for a short period of time. And it just never felt right. And so what happened is it started to progress and bad things started to happen. Like, I'm also a veteran, and a lot of part of my story is I have 4 DUIs. And I got court-martialed in the military. 2 of my DUIs was when I was in the military, 1 month from each other. And I thought the military was the issue, and I decided to leave the military. And I got an honorable discharge, but, like, a general discharge, meaning that I lost my GI benefits and everything. And so I served almost 6 years, and that was wiped away from me. I was court-martialed. I was sent to jail, and all that. And so that was embarrassing. But still, like, I still didn't care. You know what I mean? Like, I would go out partying, blame everything on everybody else. You know what I mean? I went AWOL for a short period of time. They sent me to AA. That was the first time I went to AA. And these people, they're, like, in a circle, and, like, they're talking about things, and I was just, like, it was just a blur to me. Like, my ears and my eyes were not open. I was just, like, I was worried about going out doing what I wanted, you know? I was worried about being in the military, and don't ask, don't tell, that I was queer, and that nobody cared about me. I couldn't be myself, you know what I mean? Like, which is all valid things, you know? But it was just another reason for me to drink. You know, me being queer, me being in the military, me being black, me being trans, like, all those things don't make me an alcoholic. You know, what makes me an alcoholic is that when I pick up that first drink, I don't know when I'm going to stop. And that's just what we all have in common. And that's when I had the connection. And so, yeah, years, I get out of the military. I also, part of my story, I'm a parent also. There's a lot to my story, and I can't fit it all in 15 minutes, but I abandoned, like, my family. I, like, wrote off papers to my son at a period of time, and yeah, I just didn't care about other individuals. I got out of the military, and I was still just a single parent trying to survive in the world. And then yeah, I got into relationships. I'm a very codependent person. Like, I've met any person that liked me. They were, like, the love of my life, you know? Like, like, let's go. Like, it's on, you know? And that's just, like, what I knew. I don't know how to do anything in modernization, you know? It's just, like, I'm all in or I'm all out. I'm very black and white, you know? But my sexuality and being queer was something, when I got in the military, something I struggled with. And so I would drink around that. Like, I didn't know how to interact. I didn't know how to present myself. I didn't know how to do these things, but I was having these feelings. And so I met, like, yeah, I had my first girlfriend finally, and my family, I came out of the closet, this and that, but then, like, also was a parent. And so it was, like, very complicated for me to even, like, explain that, you know? Today I identify as pansexual also too, you know, but I just was uncomfortable. And so, the drinking progressed. I got more DUIs outside of the military. And, by this time it was like, look, we're going to send you to jail, and, like, you're, like, for real jail, like, city jail, not just, like, military jail, but, like, for real. And I was like, yo, I don't want to lose my freedom, you know? That was the only thing that scared me, is me losing my freedom. And so I was like, okay, I'll do whatever it takes. And so I had to do a deferred process for 2 years, and I did that. But, like, when I was doing that, like, I was still drinking. Like, I went to treatment for 2 years. I was playing their game. I was, like, getting my court slips lined and this and that, but I met some of the people in there, and they knew, like, how, like, those are my friends. Those are the people that know how to, like, play, like, break the system or whatever. Those are the people I wanted to hang out with. And I knew, like, in the back of my mind, like, what I was doing was wrong, but I just didn't care, you know? And so I got through that program and all of that, and then what happened is I started to realize, like, I was hurting people, you know? I started to build a conscience, I guess. I would go out with my friends, and we would go out to, like, these queer bars and stuff. I'm from Seattle, and I would get so drunk and high. I was mixing drugs, too. I would get so drunk and high that they would have to, like, send me away in cabs by myself. You know, like, I got drunk one time, and, like, they couldn't find me in a hotel, and they had to call security. And security had to find me on the cameras, you know, and I was at my sister's friend's party, you know, just, like, embarrassing things, you know, I cheated on my ex-wife, you know, like, just, like, not things I'm very proud of today. And so, what happened is that during the pandemic, I was very isolated, and my drinking progressed. I started to take pills more. I had a major surgery. I started to take pills more, and I started smoking marijuana like really, really bad, to take the pain away. And I had to look at myself in the mirror, and there was no girlfriend, there was no people. I was isolating a lot, and I would just sit in my room and get drunk and get high. By this time, my son had graduated, so I couldn't like focus on him anymore. It was just me looking at myself, and I was like, just like hitting a rock bottom. I was sad, you know. I had everything. Like I'm the type of alcoholic where I can maintain a good job, you know, but like, and I had everything, you know, but I still wasn't happy, you know. Nothing fulfilled that void. And so I asked for help for the first time, I feel like, in my life. I asked for help because I was that desperate. It was either I wasn't going to be on this earth anymore, or I got desperate and asked, like, hey, I need to get out of this. And finally, I asked for help. Someone on Instagram, it's weird, they're like someone on social media. I love social media. That's one reason why I love social media, because honestly, someone on social media was like talking about their sobriety, and they were doing like van life, and I was like, oh my gosh, like I want to do what they do. And they were talking about being sober, and I was just like, hey, how are you doing that? It was on the live stream. And they were like, I was like, should I go to AA? Because I was so against it. I was like, I'm not going to that place. I don't want to be like those people. I had been there before. It was just like a whole bunch of old, like, white guys smoking cigarettes. Like, how am I going to relate to them? Like, you know, like, there's nothing we have in common, right? But I was desperate, so I was just like, fuck. Like, I was screwed, you know? Like, I can't stop drinking. I've tried this by myself. And I was trying to get, I would get, like, 30 days, you know? But then I would start to, like, go off on people. So I was, like, a very dry drunk. I was angry, you know? And, I was like, I don't know what's wrong. Like, it's their, you know, I would just, like, go, which was, like, very out of character because I've always been, like, kind of soft-spoken and stuff. So, like, something was, like, off, you know? And I was like, oh, I quit drinking. But, and so nothing ever, I never could put it together in my head or whatever. But anyways, so, yeah, van life lady, she was, like, really cool. And so I went to online, like, Zoom meetings, right? I got sober over Zoom meetings, which is crazy. And I asked this lady, she was, like, cool. She was, like, a little short, like very, like, older lady, but she liked, like, hip-hop music. I was like, oh, she's, like, cool. She listens to Dr. Dre, and she was like in her 50s or whatever, but she was like, she had swag. And I was like, all right, like, I'm gonna ask her to be my sponsor, you know? And she was like, okay, I'll sponsor you. And I thought this, like, I started, so the whole sponsor, I was like, I don't know, like, what, I was like totally oblivious, like, what was going on. And she had me do these things, and I was, like, following her around, you know? And I was like, this lady's crazy, right? Like, she's, like, bonkers. Like, this is, something's off. And so I was like, I'm not, like, me. And so we started, she was like, meet me at my house certain days, and we're going to start reading this book, you know? And I was just like, okay. But, see, I had been sent to AA, like, all these years, and I never opened the book. And it's funny because, like, I had a big book given to me when I got my first DUI in the military, and I kept that big book with me throughout those whole years. This is probably, like, maybe, like, 15 years later. I still had that big book. For whatever reason, throughout life, I was like, I'm not going to throw it away. And I don't know if that's, like, a godsend or whatever, but, like, that's crazy that I still had this book. I knew, like, something. I knew that I should have quit drinking eventually, but, like, I just didn't know. I wasn't ready, you know. I knew that it was causing a problem throughout my life. Anyway, she took me through the steps. And I'll be honest, like, the first time I did the steps, I was still high. Like, I feel like I wrote my first fourth step high. I was like, okay, like, I can do this. I can write it out. I'm a smoke. I'm being completely honest. And I told her, I was like, look, like, I quit the drinking thing, you know? And she was like, okay, like you can tell, like she was like totally like, okay, like, and but you know, that's just part of my story, honestly. And okay. And she didn't judge me. Like, she met me where I was at, you know. I told her I was sober. I told her that that I was queer. I told her I was like completely honest with this lady. And when we did the fifth step, even though I'm telling you, even though I was high, writing my fourth step or whatever, but when I went to her house and we did the fifth step, I had a spiritual awakening the next day. I felt like this tremendous like weight lifted off of my shoulders for the first time. And that was the day that I was completely honest with someone. And I'd never been honest with anyone in my life. I was too afraid. I thought people were gonna judge me. I thought I wasn't important enough. I thought my story didn't matter. I thought no one could relate. Like, I thought I was all alone in this world. And I was just like, I was questioning why I was even here, you know? And I thought like the things that I did were like so bad that they weren't fixable. I felt like the people that loved me, wanted to like get rid of me, you know? I did my fifth step, and then I did my, you know, I did six and seven, and I wrote my list, my step eight, and I had to make amends, you know? And I'm so worried about making amends to like my ex-girlfriends, you know? Because that's like, I'm a codependent, so like that's like top notch on my list. Like, I need to make amends to my ex-girlfriends because, you know, I got to show them that I'm a good person, obviously. And so, and for real, it matters. And so, and my sponsor, she was like, yeah, no, we're not doing that. You need to like, and that was like a shot in the gut. I was like, what do you mean we're not doing that? The only reason I'm in AA right now is to prove to my ex that I'm a good person. And that was for real. And that was my motivation, because my ex did not believe that at the time. And I had to prove that, hey, I don't have a problem. And so my ego was like, and so she's like, yeah, no, we're not doing that. And she's like, I need you to pray on this a little bit more and figure out who you want to make your first amends to, you know? And I was like, fine. And I made my first amends to my sister. And I was like, how about that? Someone that's been with me throughout my whole life, like my sister, why wouldn't she be the first one, you know? And she's been with me. She was actually in the car with me when I got my third DUI. And so I made amends to my sister, and it's so crazy. Like, you're sitting there, at least my experience, I'm sitting there, I'm talking to her, I'm going out down the list, you know, and it's like, I'm wanting this person to like, come at me hard, tell me how big of a piece of shit I am, like I deserve like what I got, you know, and they don't do that, you know, they don't do that, you know, like, yeah, like what I did, that's valid, like, you know, but like that's the first time I believed in like a higher power of God, you know, honestly, like connection wise, I was like, oh my gosh, like you care about me, even though I hurt you. Cause I never really experienced that type of love before. Even I was delusional of it, I guess. And so, I was like, wow, like I can make mistakes and I could still be cared for. I could be like not perfect, or I could be different and still be cared for. Like I could be queer and still be cared for, or trans, you know? And so, yeah, so all that is cool, like cool. And then like today, I know time is coming up. Today I get to live the life of my dreams, honestly. Like I have friends that I honestly can trust. I trust my life with them. Like, we travel the world. Like, if I know that if I'm dealing with something, I can trust them, like, with my secrets, and they're not going to judge me, you know, and vice versa, you know. We have each other's back. Like, I've never had experience that type of relationship with people. I consider people in this program my family, and I really mean that. I'm able to be a queer barber, and, like, I cut, like, do gender-affirming haircuts. Like, I was able to, like, cut hair at Pride last year, which was, like, crazy, you know? I'm almost done with school. I'm in, like, the most healthiest relationship I've ever been in. But also, I don't have to put that as my number one, you know? Like, I can do other things outside of that. Like, I can just be a regular human today. And I can make mistakes today, and people can forgive me. I cannot be perfect. And, yeah, I can just, like, show up. And that's, like, cool. And I also can say I'm sorry today, which before I was never able to say I'm sorry. So, yeah, I'm just thankful for this program, and that's all I got. Thank you. Nico.
Yay, thank you, Nico. Our second speaker is Marley.
It's gonna be 15 minutes, so 10 and then 5.
Okay.
Yeah, I missed it, I'm sorry.
Okay. It's just not 20.
It's like 15.
Okay. Hi, I'm Marley, I'm an alcoholic. My pronouns are they, he, she. But I identify as non-binary, but I don't care what you can call me as long as you call me. my sobriety date is 12/12/2024. So I guess to start, I think I was like they say, alcohol and drugs are merely a symptom of our alcoholism. And I think that I was an alcoholic, apparently, from a very young age. I was a troubled child. I had behavioral issues. I got, like, taken out of the third grade, and I had to go to a doctor and get evaluated. And that's when I started stimulants. I do have a lot of, like, mental health aspects to my story. There's a lot of relapse in my story. And I will be discussing that. I don't think I'm really going to get into detail about it, but I will be discussing the mental health and suicide attempts. So if that makes anyone uncomfortable, I'm not going to be offended if you leave. But I am going to be offended if you don't come back and see the other panelists. So my first suicide attempt was when I was 12, it was a lot of stuff going on, but it was just, like, another indicator that, like, there was something going on. And I mean, like, I always felt really uncomfortable growing up. Something didn't feel right. Like, I just didn't feel comfortable in my skin, and I didn't feel comfortable with, like, the way that people would view me, and I never knew how to articulate that and how to articulate that, like, a girl didn't feel right for me being called that, but being called a boy didn't feel right either, and I, for a very long time, didn't know what was up with that, but I did know that I was definitely gay, and that was rejected very quickly. And what I decided to do about that is drink over it, because that's what became my go-to when something went wrong in my life, was to take that and to drink about that thing. So I moved to Texas, at middle school area, and that was when I was, like, outed because of some, like, tomfoolery. And it was not my choice for that to happen, and it wasn't received well. And that's when I realized that I hated the word God, because it was used against me, and it was used to hurt me, and it was used to spread hatred toward me. I mean, I was, like, sent, like, Bible verses every morning by this dude in my grade about, like, man shall not lie with man and shit. And I was like, okay, I hate you and I hate that. So that, like, took me a long time to work through, obviously. I kept drinking over these things. And every time something happened in my life that was really bad, something traumatic occurred in my life, I would drink over that thing and I would do drugs over that thing. I didn't mention I started doing drugs when I was, like, 13. And I didn't stop. So I think things like really took off though, like when I went to college, because they were like progressing like kind of slowly, and then they started progressing like really fast. Cause like I think everyone's disease is progressive, but they progress in different ways, and like all of our stories are different, but they're also the same. And mine progressed quickly at a certain point, and it got to a really weird place. And other people's stories have gotten to like an entirely different kind of place that also is really awful. Mine was like, I did the math and I've spent, I was just wondering like how much time have I spent in psych wards? And I have more psych ward time than sober time, if that tells you something. But all of my psych ward visits were related to my drug use and alcoholism. But yeah, things just snowballed, and after my first suicide attempt, they were like, you need to get sober. And so then I did that, and I was 18, and I went to AA for the first time. And then I've been in AA ever since. I was 18, in and out, and in and out, you know, and relapse, and then I'm back in the rooms, and, like, I'm pretending to do the steps and, like, all this stuff. And it is crazy, like, I've talked about this before, I think, to people, but like when people say your disease is doing push-ups in the parking lot, metaphors are hard for me, I should say that, but like I don't get it. Like I, for a very long time, was like, why the fuck is it doing push-ups? Like it's a disease, like that doesn't make sense. But I think I like kind of get it, like after like thinking about it for a really long time, because like every time I relapsed, it was so much worse, you know, like every time it just came back 10 times harder, because this disease is progressive and it doesn't stop progressing just because you stop drinking. And I learned that. And I learned that it took shorter amounts of time for me to hit a crazy bottom, for me to like almost die, or for me to actually die and then be brought back to life, obviously. But it has happened. I think another thing is like I was like still closeted for a very long time. And like when I was drunk, I would like hook up with girls, and like I was like, this is fine, like no inhibitions, whatever. But then like I would also be weird about it, and like that's a whole thing. But I did like decide in college, so I decided to rush, and I was gonna join a sorority, and then I found out that there was this co-ed fraternity, and everyone referred to it as the Coke frat, and I was like, okay, like sign me up. So I did join that fraternity, and that was, it was just a bunch of like, you know, like really preppy like douchebags, you know, that are like frat boys, and they were homophobic, they were racist, misogynistic, fat phobic, like everything that like can be offensive, they love that thing. And like I hated that, and I like would hang out with them all the time and then drink about it at night. And it was, I don't know what the goal was, but I do know that that's when I decided to come out. And like I don't know. And it was like this weird like dichotomy between like being fetishized and being just like hate crimes. And that was that. And I was like, okay, this is like what being gay is. But I did become like a shell of a person. I had like people tell me that. I had a teacher pull me into his office and tell me I was a shell of a person, and that I wasn't the person who began that course. And I literally was like, this isn't related to our class. And I left because I was like so pissed. I had multiple interventions and I did the same thing. It like you couldn't reach me until like I really had to bottom out in like, I mean, a lot of times, honestly, I think, I don't know why, but my higher power just, like, at one point was like, you're ready to hear it now, because I just wasn't ready to hear the message, and I wouldn't listen, and I would sit there, and I would listen, but I couldn't hear it, and at one point, I heard it, and that was when I moved here. I think it was, like, it started with, like, you know, like, I did my first step, and I realized that, like, I had a hard time admitting I was powerless over alcohol. it was like not something I could face because I was like, yeah, obviously my life's unmanageable. Like I'm in the psych ward all the time. They all know me. But I do miss Tony. But the powerless part was harder for me. And I realized that it could be phrased in a way that's like, if I drink or do drugs, as soon as they enter my system, I become a bad person. You know, like I do things I don't agree with and I do things that don't line up with my values and I hurt people. Like I really do. And I hurt my family and I hurt the people that I love the most. And I couldn't like control that at a certain point. As soon as the alcohol was in my system, I couldn't stop in that way. And I mean, I couldn't stop in the way of like drinking, but I was not ready to admit that yet. But and then I had a lot of trouble still with the God thing. And I had a lot of harbored resentment toward that. And every time I was told to pray, I would like be like, okay, yeah, I just did. And I like obviously didn't. But my sponsor at one point was just like, just pray like to nothing. Just like sit there and like be an idiot, okay? Like just do it and like keep doing it every day. And I was like, yeah, okay, I will, because that's stupid. I'll show you. And then like I was doing it, you know, like, and eventually I did feel some sort of connection. And then I had time in my fourth step to talk about a lot of things. okay, sorry. I had trouble with my fourth step too because I wasn't ready to look at my part, and I thought that that was really fucked up that someone said I should, and someone said that like in these really horrible things too, like things that happened when I was a minor, like the times I was assaulted and like domestic violence. I'm like, how am I supposed to look at my part in this? And I realized that I was thinking that that meant my fault, and like my part does not mean my fault. And that's really important to remember. I've heard it described to me before as like when you are driving and you're not wearing your seatbelt and you get hit by a drunk driver. Like none of that's your fault and you couldn't have controlled that. That like that happened and it really sucks. But you can look at the fact that you weren't wearing a seatbelt and in the future think about that and like think about the fact that you can get less hurt if you wear a seatbelt. And like I look at that in many ways, like not walking around the sidewalk in New York City barefoot at 2 a.m. fucked up. Like that is like how I can wear my seatbelt in the future in that aspect. But there are also things, like, I think it's also, in my opinion, like, sometimes things happen when you're just a kid, and, like, you were just a kid. I think the only way that your part is using that as a reason to drink, and using that resentment as, like, something you can hold on to and do destructive behaviors because of, because that's what I would do. And that didn't get me anywhere. But, so fourth and fifth was hard for me. Six and seven... I knew it was going to happen. They doing them thoroughly is so important to me because, like, that's the only way I can go into my 8 and 9 is if I deal with the character defects and I look at them and I become willing to remove them, because otherwise nothing has changed and I can't tell someone that I am ready to make amends and that I am ready to, like, be a different person when I'm not, because I haven't looked at those things, because alcohol is a symptom, you know? And yeah, I mean, sometimes amends sucked, sometimes they didn't. They were nonetheless meaningful. Sometimes I got told off by people I was not expecting to be told off by, and some people were, like, so kind, and I was like, why? But when I started my, like, 8 and 9, the first person I wanted to make amends to was my ex-girlfriend. I was like, I'm ready, you know, like, let's talk to her. And every sponsor I've ever had who's seen that on my eighth step, and I've, like, tried to trick them by, like, not telling them that previous sponsors have said this, but, like, every time they're, like, leave her alone. Like, just stop. So that's, like, yeah, I guess it's my living amends, and it sucks. Because, like, I'm in my alcoholism, like, I decided to ruin something, and I decided to, like, enter in a relationship that I wasn't ready to be in, that, like, I wish I waited for, because she was a truly incredible person. And now I can never speak to her again, you know, because of that, and because I chose to do that, and that stinks. But life is life. I guess I will just end with, because I have 30 seconds left, I'll end with the fact that sobriety is so beautiful in so many ways, especially because I get to choose who I surround myself with now. You know, like, I'm not chained up by so many different aspects, like my family and my drugs and alcohol and all these things that were just, like, restricting me, you know, like, I can choose who I'm around now, and I choose to surround myself with the queer community because I've never felt more welcome and tolerated and, like, accepted, and I don't feel like a weirdo, you know, like, and that's cool. So, like, I've realized too that my queerness is beautiful, and, like, it's not something I'm gonna hide anymore, you know, because I'm really proud of it, because it's really great. Lastly, like, with the mental health stuff, I guess I did not talk about it that much, but with all of it, you can, I still go through a lot. I'm going through something right now, and it sucks, you know, like, there's even, like, doing whatever, like, I still suck sometimes, you know, and, like, that's a given, but what you can do is you can cope sometimes, and that's all you can do, because I'm still, like, in that alcoholic mindset where I'm, like, how can I escape this? What can I do to fix this? What drug can I take that will make it better? But I can't, you know, like, I can cope, and, like, that's okay, because the really cool thing is that I could never do that before, you know, I could never not destroy myself over some inconvenience, and right now I can deal with a lot, and I can get through it, even if it's hard. So I'm so grateful to be here, and I'm so grateful for all of you, and I'm grateful we're all alive. Thanks so much for letting me share.
Yay, thank you, Marley. Our third speaker is Eric.
It's gonna be 15 minutes.
Okay.
And I'll do 10 and then 5.
Cool, thanks. Hi, guys. My name is Eric, and I'm an alcoholic.
Eric.
Grateful to be here. Thank you guys for your leads. I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be sober. This is not my favorite thing to do in the world. I don't like attention. I don't like public speaking. And, you know, the reason I say yes to stuff like this, other than the fact that it's part of our program and it's being of service, on a personal level, I did not want to be here when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And God, I'm so nervous. My aura ring probably is, like, about to pop. So when I got here, I would go to meetings and I would hear the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And I remember leaving thinking, like, I don't qualify to be here because I just can't imagine my life sober. I love the effects produced by alcohol. And I don't understand why I would want to not have that in my life forever. I wanted to control and enjoy my drinking. And, you know, I clearly couldn't do that. And so I kept coming back because they also said, if you're new, keep coming back. And so I did. And, you know, my sponsor asked me one time, if you didn't want to be sober, why did you keep coming back to meetings? And I said, because it was the only place where people, complete strangers, told me to come back. And at that time in my life, my entire family blocked me. My friends didn't want to be around me. And this was the only place where people, even though I was awkward and super standoffish, people, like, loved me. And people told me that they were going to love me until I could love myself. And I thought it was the cringiest thing I'd ever heard. But it's what I needed, and I didn't know that I needed that at the time. And so that's why I say yes to this. It's really uncomfortable. But as a result of working the steps, I had a spiritual awakening. And my attitude and outlook on life changed. And, like, I've changed. And if it could happen for me, it could happen for anyone, because I have a desire to be sober today. And I never thought that would be a thing. So, yeah, I'm grateful to be here. My sobriety date is February 11th, 2022. I just celebrated 4 years. Thank you. And yeah, it's not my first sobriety date, but I've been able to maintain that date by going to meetings, having a sponsor, working the steps. I work with sponsees. I say yes to service. I have commitments. I try my best to practice the principles in all of my affairs. I'm not perfect, but thank God there are steps for that. And yeah, I grew up here in San Diego, and God, like other people shared, I was just the most awkward, uncomfortable person. I thought I was an alien. I thought I was like switched at birth. Like I just felt so weird as a kid. And not only did I feel weird, but I not only did I feel different, like I was different and I was treated differently. And, you know, my family was very Christian and I was told I was going to hell before I even knew what gay meant, because I liked to play with Barbies and I liked makeup and I liked to go to the mall with my mom and I liked to watch her get her nails done and like I was a little feminine, like, you know, and that wasn't okay in my family. So I was treated differently. I also am half Mexican and half white. So at school, I never felt like I ever really fit in with, like, I was too white for the Mexican people. I was too Mexican for the white people. So, like, anywhere I went, I just never felt like I fit in. And I remember my first drink. It was the first time I ever felt like I could just breathe. Like, all that extra stuff didn't matter. I actually liked who I was, and I actually was able to feel comfortable in my skin, and I wanted to feel that way forever. And, you know, it wasn't like my drinking wasn't like I had my first drink and it was just blackout and I drank every single day. Like mine was a super slow progression, and I was able to start a career and like graduate and do all these things. And for me, it wasn't until COVID happened that my disease had me exactly where it wanted me. I was home alone. I had nowhere to be. And I just drank all day long. And I remember talking to a therapist, and I was the first time I'd been honest about my drinking. And she told me that it was COVID and that everyone else was drinking a lot too. And so I was like, oh, okay, cheers. And I just kept going, you know, and it wasn't until the world opened back up that I realized that I couldn't function anymore. I would wake up in the morning and I would have to drink just to get out of bed. Like my body couldn't handle any more alcohol, but it couldn't function without it. So I'd be in the shower and I'd hold my breath and I would chug and I would puke and I would chug some more. And like, that was like normal to me. Like I didn't think that, you know, I just needed to function and I needed to get to work and I needed to pay my bills and I, you know, so I just thought that was part of life. And eventually, you know, shit hit the fan and I went to rehab. And I remember I was there for a few days and they told me that I was an alcoholic, and I called an Uber, and I was like, I still just couldn't grasp the concept of like never being able to drink again. And so I stayed sober for a few days, and I remember I went to a bar with a friend, and I had a drink, and it was like no time had, like it was just right back where I left off. And it was just this cycle of like going to rehab, relapsing, like not understanding the concept of powerlessness. And I met this girl, Jen, and she became one of my closest friends at the time. And she was sober. And I remember introducing her to my friends, and I was like, you guys, be nice to her. She's sober. It's really sad. Like, poor girl. And yeah, that was interesting. So, you know, eventually she was like, Eric, I think you would benefit from coming to a meeting. And I said no for a really long time. And eventually shit just got really, really bad. And I went to a meeting and I cried and I went to the bathroom and drank and came back out. And people knew that I was drunk, but they were okay with it. And I wasn't shamed for it. And I kept coming back, and eventually I got a sponsor and I started working the steps. And I just did all the things that my sponsor told me to do. I definitely didn't do it perfectly, but I tried my best, and slowly my life started to change. I remember I was sober for like 3 months. I was completely miserable, but I met a girl who was new, and she was crying, and I got excited because I wasn't that miserable. And I was like, okay, this is kind of working. So I was at a meeting, and I left the meeting, and I was driving to the liquor store because I just hated the way I felt when I was sober. I was just riddled with fear and resentment and carrying all this baggage. And I remember crying because I knew I was going to end up, it was just the same cycle. Like, I'm driving to the liquor store, best case scenario, I end up back in rehab, back in AA, back in this car wondering, what is the recipe? And I remembered when I left that meeting that day, someone said, if you don't have a higher power, I suggest you get in contact with one. And so I sat in my car crying, and I just said out loud, like, God, like, how the fuck do I get in contact with you? Like, how do I find this connection with you? And I looked up, and the car in front of me, the license plate said, seek it. And I took a photo of it because I was like, this is crazy. And I didn't drive to the liquor store, and I haven't had a drink since then. And yeah, that was my first God shot. And it, to me, it was more than just a coincidence. It was just something that I felt, and I continued getting things like that. I worked the steps, and you know, life got really good, and I think it was like, I was maybe like 2 years sober, and like shit, like hit the fan. I was going through a really gnarly breakup. I had walked in on my boyfriend in bed with another guy, so it was even worse than just a breakup. The IRS froze my bank account, took all of my money. I was moving out of my apartment, couldn't get approved for a new apartment on my own. So I was going to be homeless, broke, and heartbroken. And I was going to my best friend's wedding in Oregon, and not just a wedding, but this huge $10 million wedding. So I'm sitting at this wedding, broke, heartbroken. And instead of sitting in, God, sorry, one sec. Instead of dwelling in self-pity, I invited God as my plus one to that wedding. And it was one of the most beautiful experiences to watch my friend walk down the aisle and have so much love instead of what I would normally feel is envy. And it was such a beautiful moment to be able to sit there and enjoy that and know that like God was with me. And when I got home, everything worked out. All the financial things worked out. The apartment worked out. The resentment worked out. And what I learned from that experience was that I needed to surrender every aspect of my life, not just the alcohol and whatever. I had to surrender my business, my finances, my relationships. And that was a really hard thing for me to have to learn. So today, God, you know, my sponsor always says if I wake up tomorrow, I'll still be an alcoholic. And I think about that every day because, you know, the better my life gets, the more I push AA away. It's the first thing to go. And I think of that every morning. I pray every morning and I thank God for my sponsor and for that little reminder because I'm so crazy without this program. Like, my life is so unmanageable when I'm not working these steps. And so I think there's like one little thing that I'm going through right now, and it's, I feel like my whole life I have always felt this like missing piece. I've always been searching for that piece in men, and I've always felt like I needed to have someone in order for me to be complete and to be happy. And for the last few months after my last breakup, I begged God for that obsession to be removed. And for the first time in my entire life, I actually feel complete and whole with just this relationship with God. And I've never felt that before. I've never felt like complete. And to me, it's one of the most amazing feelings in the world. And it's literally just because I do these things. I trust God, I clean house, and I help other people. And I just am super grateful to have this program, and I'm excited to see what God has in store for, you know, I always say, I don't know if I'm gonna be sober forever, but I know that I can try for today, and that's all I have, thanks.
Yay, thank you, Eric. Our fourth and final speaker is Deandra.
Deandra, alcoholic. Thanks for having me on this panel. It's really cool. So cool hearing everyone's stories. Wow. Where to begin? Something I was thinking about, I guess, was I was a very over-controlled alcoholic, or I'm still a very over-controlled alcoholic, actually, to this day. But in my drinking days, I was very over-controlled about it, and yeah, when I was growing up, I feel like my entire goal was to not be an alcoholic. Like, every day of my life, I swear, I was like, how do I not become like my mom? Like, that was my mission in life, and I was comparing everything that I did to her and her alcoholism. And yeah, it's just so funny, because now I'm here, and it's awesome. How great is it to be an alcoholic? But yeah, so that's a huge part of my story, is just like, really having a hard time accepting that I wanted to drink and use as much as I wanted without controlling it. And I spent a lot of my time thinking about how to control it. Most of my friends when I was drinking were just people who were like worse alcoholics than me. And it really helped me to just feel like, okay, like I'm not like them, so it's okay. Like, it's gonna be fine. I just need to make sure I don't, like, I'm the one taking care of the person who's blacked out. Like, I'm not going to be the person who's blacked out until I am. And I lived like that until I was 25, and, or I guess I was 24. And then when I was 24, I went through a series of bad breakups. I came out as a lesbian. I went through my first lesbian breakup. And then I was like, I am as bad as all those other alcoholics I was hanging out with, actually. And now I'm drinking every day. So that was when I think that was my first actual surrender. Like, in a way, I kind of did the first step then and was able to just be like, you know what, like, this is what it is. And like, I felt that it was working. Like, I was like, this is going to be my solution. Like, if I drink every day at work, I will have a good day at work. Like, if I'm drunk at work, I'm going to be a great time to be around, and I'm going to do a good job at my job. And like, I'll actually want to go to work tomorrow. And that doesn't work. Just kidding. It doesn't really work like that. Today I don't live like that. I have 2 years sober now. And I'm a great employee. That's one of my proudest accomplishments. but yeah, it's really funny. That's like such a big part of my story, is like, I just, Nobody knew that I was an alcoholic when I was out. Like, I was able to hide so much and, like, maintain such a, like, illusion of, like, self-control and assuredness. And I wanted everyone to think I was healing from my childhood trauma and all these things. But at the end of the day, like, I could not, like, feel okay. Like, I couldn't figure out how to be like everyone else. Like, I felt always like everyone else has said. I just felt so othered and different. And, like, I would put so many different labels on why I was different, like, all sorts of identities and all the things. But it didn't matter what room you put me in. Like, if I was in a room of myself, I would feel othered, you know? Like, I just have that, and it's just part of the disease. But I didn't think that there was a solution for that, you know? Like, I really thought that it was true. Like, I thought I was just different, and I was, like, uniquely, like, destined to just be miserable for my whole life and, like, never be able to, like, feel real love and feel real connection and feel real peace of mind and feel like I have a purpose or that I'm gonna, like, succeed in any area of my life. Like, I just couldn't believe that that was possible for me. And then I finally came to the rooms through a God shot of a very lovely person who I still, yeah. Anyway, that's too gay. So, yeah, I... But yeah, I finally did come to the rooms, and I was open-minded at that point. Like, I knew that something was wrong with me, and I was kind of like, all right, what's it gonna be? Like, am I an alcoholic, or am I, like, do I just have alcoholic parents? Like, I went to ACA at first, because I just thought it was my mom's fault, naturally. So I tried that, but then it made me want to drink, so then I was like, well, maybe I should stop drinking. And then, yeah, I finally stopped drinking, and kept coming back to the rooms, and I heard from all of you that, like, I'm not different. I am the same as everyone else. I have the same pain. I have the same sense of isolation. I have the same sense of doomedness. I have the same sense of, like, not being able to feel comfortable ever, like, in any way, you know? Like, I could just see in everyone's stories that I'm not unique at all, and it was, like, the perfect medicine for me to, like, relax. Like, in my first couple months sober, I felt so just like a, like, live wire, you know? Like, I was just a raw nerve, and, like, everything was painful, and everyone was scary, and everything was overwhelming, and I didn't know what was going on. And I would go to the same meeting on Tuesdays, and literally, like, it felt like it was just like a warm, like, hearth or something, where I was, like, just going in there, and it was, like, the only safe place in the world. Like, just these people sitting around and, like, talking about how they are, like, working to have serenity. And yeah, I just kept coming back, and I felt so excited to work my steps, because I was so convinced that I was, like, the worst person in the world, and I had done so many horrible things, and that I was just, like, a horrible person. And I heard about the fourth step, and I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to get to tell everyone how horrible I am. Like, I'm so happy I get to, like, reveal all of my sins to this person, and, like, finally, like, they're gonna tell me, like, yeah, you are a bad person, and yeah, you have to apologize to everyone. And then I did that, and I was just so, like, someone else said it too, like, I was just like, wait, why are you, like, so nice? Like, this person was just so sweet and patient with me, and was just very reassuring and telling me that, like, it makes sense that I did all of those things. Like, every horrible thing that I thought I did, well, I did do some horrible things, but every horrible thing that I did, like, I was worthy of forgiveness over, you know? And it was just a very beautiful experience. And then going into my sixth and seventh step, I really felt like I had a list of what was wrong with me, and now I can just, like, feel, like, relieved. Like, I don't have to wonder what's wrong with me anymore. Like, I have this list, and I refer to it daily. No, okay, not daily. But I refer to it frequently, and I'm like, oh, I'm doing that thing that makes me kind of, like, evil, so I can just stop doing that. Like, I'm being judgmental. What if I just stop being judgmental? That's a really crazy thought. You can just do that. And I feel like the steps just, like, really work for me. Like, the way my brain works, I mean, I think it's all of our brains as alcoholics, like, it just is so transparent and clear and straightforward and, like, simple, you know? And I'm so grateful for them, because I needed simple, because my my big brain, I was like, it's capitalism, and I'm gay, and I'm black, and I'm a communist, and like, pretty much the only way I could ever be happy is if the government falls, and then finally we start a commune, and then maybe I'll be able to like feel connected to other people then. And I don't really see that happening anytime soon, so I'm just glad I have this. It's a lot more simple. And yeah, sometimes I do feel like we have a little commune, you know, like I have my home group and we all hang out in the grass, and for like an hour a week, I'm like, okay, we have our little commune. It's very democratically run. We have the business meeting. We all like make our motions. We all have a say. It's really cool. And yeah, I don't know where I'd be without this program, honestly. Like I couldn't see a future for myself in any way. And now I'd take the next indicated step. I have a higher power. I talk to whatever my God is as much as I can, and it feels easier and easier every day to just believe that like there's something out there that is like taking care of me, because I see the way my life is unfolding that I am taken care of. Like all of these problems that I used to have are just not problems for me anymore. And I get handed new problems and I'm like, wow, this is fun. Like so stoked. But I'm grateful to have new problems. I'm not keep, you know, beating a dead horse of the same problem over and over again. Like I know what my problem is. I'm an alcoholic, and yeah, I'm really grateful to be in this program. Thank you.
Yay. Thank you so much. Thanks again to all of our speakers. We will now open the floor for questions for any of the speakers. And there is a microphone. So raise your hands. Let's go.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Oh, I didn't hear that part.
I have a question for Marley. Hi. I know you mentioned like mental health with your sobriety and stuff. That affects me a lot too. Do you feel like your mental health ties into your relapses? Like your mental health kind of starts to swing down first, and then it creates a relapse?
Hello? Okay, cool. Yeah, totally. I mean, I think the two are like tied intrinsically. But at the same time, I find it for myself not useful to think about, like, is it the chicken or the egg? Like, you know, like what's causing what, and like which one does what? Like, I kind of am just, I always just try to remind myself to look at them as like two co-occurring things, you know, like they're both happening and I need to treat them both. I need to do AA and I need to seek outside help, AKA therapy and psychiatry.
My name is Josh. I'm an alcoholic. This might be a heavy one, but having done like some fifth steps with, I'm a straight ally, but something that comes up a lot with, like mostly with the heteros, is this: like if you don't have any gay shit on your fifth step, you didn't do a good fourth step, basically, right? And I've had this conversation where it's like, and there's a lot of shame around that. And I think, you know, as everybody here probably understands, like a lot of that we just learn, right? And, but I did just pick up my first queer sponsee, and I wanna be sure to, you know, like I wanna make sure I'm understanding that I don't have certain experiences, right? And navigating certain conversations. But I guess my question is, what does that look like in learning to reframe what you've been taught in not accepting that part of yourself, and like learn to fully embrace that as a queer person, or even before you realized you were, like, yeah, I don't know if that makes sense, but like deconditioning that shitty thinking that so many of us have been taught to have.
Okay. Well, the question is how to not be homophobic, like internally and externally. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like my experience of, I mean, I really just needed to be around other gay people. Like, that to me was very important as a part of my coming out. I honestly, like, I swear to God, I did not know any lesbians at all growing up or until, yeah, like, I was, like, in my 20s, which is so sad because they must have been somewhere. Like, they were for sure around. Like, I just, like, didn't know them somehow. And I think representation is a very important part of that, like, to just be able to see someone living a life that you want, and, like, that is very inspiring, I find. And also just feel safer. Like, I feel so safe when I'm, like, in a queer herd, you know? Like, I'm like, okay.
Hello. I always want to test it. So I think with this, like, there's kind of two aspects as I see it, which is, like, the education and, like, the taking your own time to learn about these things. And, like, there's, like, you know, like, Google is not, it's pretty easy, you know. But I think there's also the aspect of taking a step back. I think in my experience, it's incredibly frustrating to me when a straight person tries to tell me how I feel when it's regarding my identity or my queerness. I guess I understand that it's complex when there's a sponsor-sponsee relationship, but I think it's important to try to listen to, like, you know, any kind of gut instinct on when it's time to, like, kind of take a step back and just suggest that this sponsee talks to a queer person because it's out of your wheelhouse or anything.
Wait, I have an answer too. I don't know if I'm allowed, but I'm going to give one. I heard recently about, like, in at AccuPause, someone was saying that, like, they allowed straight people pretty much to heal a wound that they didn't create. And that, like, really hit home for me, because it's like when I let people in, and I allow people in AA that aren't trans or aren't queer to love me, that, like, heals something that you didn't create. That some other person or something created, and it allows people to love me and, like, show me that not everyone is homophobic or transphobic. So, yeah.
Hi, my name is Keith. I'm an alcoholic. And my question is, I know for myself, when I first came into the program, I had a huge issue with the word God, with any kind of spiritual aspect of the program. And a lot of it had to do with shame from society and being told that I was not accepted. I'm curious. Because I've always thought that if you're gay, that a lot of people who come into this program typically have an issue with the God concept, or, you know, and I had no faith. For years, I was sitting around this program, not doing the work, not having any kind of a spiritual program, and it really was a huge detrimental to me actually getting to where I am today. But I'm glad I stuck around, because over a period of time, that all changed. So I would like to hear anybody speak about what that may have looked like for them as far as being gay.
Thank you for your question. I struggled with the religious aspect of trying to find a higher power when I first came in the program, even though I do have, like, was instilled in me at a very young age, like, a God, like, going to church and stuff, like, those things, having faith. But when I came to AA and trying to do that, I was trying to do, like, church things or whatever, and these people were starting to talk about, well, being gay is not, you know. And so I built up a resentment, and I was like, oh, okay, like, I'm trying to do this sober thing, trying to seek out this higher power, and I'm going to these church think people, and they're still talking about how queerness is not okay. Like, where do I fit in? I had to find my people. I had to find queer people that were found a higher power, you know? And that's what's like, oh, okay, these people are doing it also, and what does a higher power look like for you? Someone that had like sobriety, what does that look like for you? And once I'm able to see that, then I was like, okay, I can see it from a different aspect. Because I had a lot of judgment around people and like religion and like stuff like that. So I had to like kind of look out. I had to find my tribe, honestly. And that's what made me want to stay sober. And my higher power is not, when it comes, it's not very, I don't consider myself religious at all right today. It's more a spiritual thing. And so, yeah, that's what I did.
So I could only speak from experience. I grew up with a very punishing God. So when I got to AA, to me, it was another punishment. And it was very much like, God hates me. How am I going to pray to this, you know, something that hates me? And the only way that I can explain it is I had to go through what I had to go through in order to get to a point of desperation, where I was literally going to jump off my balcony or try this. Those were my only two options. And I just had this moment of clarity where I was like, if this doesn't work, then there's my balcony. And that was my personal experience. And when I got here, looking back now, what I was experiencing was God, you know, like the love of all these strangers, like that was God. And I think that little speck of willingness started to grow the more I showed up, the more I started to connect with others. And I think today, like, my higher power is love and connection, and it continues to just grow every day. So, yeah.
Okay. One more. I'm Maren, I'm an alcoholic. Thank you all for being in the panel and everybody here that supports the queer community. When I got sober, we had the club, you know, the Gay and Lesbian Alano Club. And could you guys just tell us where the meetings are that you have developed, because I know you've developed some, and some of the fun activities you're doing together to stay sober.
Hello. Thanks so much for that question. That's a really good point, or question. So, I mean, just like meetings and events, right? That's the question? Okay, yeah. So I go to, there's two queer meetings in San Diego. There's one in Morley Field at 6 p.m. on Wednesdays. It's called The Queer Side of Things. And then there's one called As Queer See It on Sundays. That's 5:30. Yes, 5:30, 1784 San Diego Avenue. And as well, I'm on this committee called GISDIPAW. And it's the Greater San Diego Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. Cast us. So we are like an almost entirely gay committee, which is super cool. And we throw like events that are just super LGBTQ plus friendly. We have a pamphlet of all LGBT meetings and the two queer meetings in San Diego. So you can reach out to Cass about that, and Mariah, those two people right there, they can give that to you. And that's a really great thing. And then we also have events. We have a Pride event around Pride time.
Oh, I thought you wanted to say something.
Woo! Sorry, that's all the time we have for questions. Once again, please join me in thanking the speakers. Woo! I've asked Marcos to close the meeting with the AA Responsibility Pledge.
Marcos, alcoholic. Responsibility pledge. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere reaches out for help.